Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prusquintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table. It just happens to be located in the studio of KHOI Community Radio, right in the center of things, downtown Ames, Iowa, right in the middle of the United States. And lots happens here on a Tuesday morning. We gather here live. Yeah, we do this show live, folks, without a net. We just kind of dive right in. And we are going to have some good things to talk about today. And this is Community Radio. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For more information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or just call the pub and ask for Marcus.
Thanks for joining us today. You, the listeners, also help make this happen because, as I said, this is Community Radio. We are sponsored by people just like you. You can go to www.khoifm.org, and you can just happen to notice the donate button there. That keeps us rolling here, and we appreciate your support. Well, here we are, mid-September, and it's sort of back to summer.
Oh, except it's so humid. My goodness. Soupy.
It is.
That expression, you know?
Who would have thought after a cool, cool late August and a cool early September, and people were kind of getting out their light jackets and sweaters, and all of a sudden we got summer back, Donna.
Well, I expect the farmers who had a very wet and late spring, who got their corn and beans in quite late, are hoping the fall will go a long time.
It might go a long time. Right now it's kind of wet for drying out things or harvesting, but yeah, it's a
late
year.
I haven't seen any harvesting yet.
It's a late year. Things are green out there yet, huh? We shall see.
I did see one tree with a little bit of hint of red coming in. I went, ooh.
Those trees, they keep track of it for us, don't they?
It's inevitable.
And thunderstorms, we've had a few.
Yeah,
we haven't had any gully washer thunderstorm. Oh, and I got a little bit of hail this weekend.
I did too, and right after that was a rainbow. So, you know.
Three cheers for weather in Iowa. It's always, it's a show. Yes, it is. Well, garden is kind of winding down for me, but there's things that are coming. The ground cherries are finally popping up a little bit thanks to the rain. And despite the fact that the Japanese beetles are beating me to a lot of it, the raspberries are coming on quite nicely.
Oh.
So I've been picking raspberries. I don't have a big lot of raspberries, but it's always nice. I pick every day to try to keep up with them.
And oh, that's how you got your bee sting.
Oh. For the beekeepers out there, no, technically it was a wasp sting. Who would have thought that picking raspberries is such a dangerous sport? I never thought, because I was looking for the Japanese beetles and just kind of shaking those off. Those are no big deal. But I got stung right on the top of my ring finger, and stings don't bother me too bad, but I do swell up and it does itch. And here's a note. When you get stung with a wasp on your ring finger, take your ring off first
immediately,
as soon as you can.
Right?
I didn't. And oh boy, the next morning, it was like I kind of thought visit to the emergency room, but I took some antihistamines, which it's supposed to like fight the allergic reaction.
Well, I see that you did not cut your wedding ring off.
No, I didn't. It's still a little swelled up there. Mm-hmm. And so, well, those insects and those wasps and bees, they like the raspberries just as much as I do. But I'm going to be a little more careful in the future. Oh, dear. Raspberries, yes. I like them on my cereal in the morning.
Oh, yes.
And a little
bright note there.
It is. Good. Oh, I have brought some show and tell to hold up to the microphone here. I would like to talk about two different kinds of mushrooms. Yes, mushrooms happen all the time, and I haven't run across one of these in a long time.
You're wild forage
mushrooms
right?
Here. Yeah.
Out in the woods at Onion Creek Farm.
I found just the most beautiful first puffball mushroom that I have seen in ages.
And how big was it? Like soccer ball? Bigger than
soccer ball.
Ooh, wow.
It kind of fell apart when I – it broke into two halves when I picked it up. But it was at least soccer ball. And it was out kind of out in the woods, kind of – on our farm there, and I saw this white lump down kind of in the weeds, and my first reaction, always think of the worst, of course, oh,
something's
my God.
Dead, yeah.
Somebody killed one of my white chickens, I thought, because it was just about that size all hunkered up, but I get down there. It is not a dead white chicken. It was a puffball, and I happened, this one happened to be just at the right consistency. If they get a little old and start getting yellow, they're not so good, but I took this thing and I cooked it and I sliced it up, fried it in butter. Oh, it was so good. And I had so much left over, I dried a bunch of it, just sliced
Who
it up.
Who knew you could even do that?
I try everything.
Now, those things grow really fast. Like, yeah, to get to that size, what do you think, a couple days or something?
A couple days, because now you see it, now you don't.
Amazing.
And although they're not the most tasty mushroom, and people kind of poo-poo the puffballs, I dried it, and so I now have a couple glass jars full of something that looks an awful lot like styrofoam. So there you go.
Okay, I'm going to open the jar and smell it because I just want to.
And I put it in some leek soup last night.
Oh, it smells like mushrooms.
Yeah, it's not. It's not your fanciest mushroom, but it's there. And
but you're not kidding. It does look like
almost styrofoam.
Like the styrofoam packing bits, but it's not been extruded. It's kind of more lumpy.
Yeah, there you
How
have
cute.
It.
Cute. Oh, Lon,
there we have
you just
it.
Did that in your dehydrator?
Dehydrator, just cut it up and do it.
Oh, so, Lana's a whiz with that dehydrator,
Doubt, see if you can dry it, and this seems to work. I also, there's some other stuff coming up, and I'm not big on mushroom identification, but I had to get the book out for this one. And I always go to my Mushrooms and Other Fungi of the Mid-Continental United States by D.M. Huffman, L.H. Tiffany, and G. Caffinus.
I have to say, Lana, if you are good enough to identify them from the book, I think you shouldn't be so modest about your skill set.
Oh, okay.
Well, I wouldn't even dare to do that.
But it has really nice pictures. And I want to mention that the authors, L.H. Tiffany, is at ISU, used to be a professor here. So we are glad to have her in the mushroom company here. Now, this one is on the other end of the spectrum from the puffballs. This one is called Ravenel's Stinkhorn.
It does sound like something one should be very careful about.
And as you look at it,
the bottom one? Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry.
It's rather phallic looking, I have to say. My goodness.
Everybody's in a
giggle, titter, titter, titter.
Because, yes, it does look like a male body part, and it is stinky. Fruiting body develops from an egg-like structure, and this was growing in a bunch of wood chips. on a path here, and produces a core from the center of the bottom, pink or purplish maturing fruiting body, and makes a head covered by olive green moist spores.
Can imagine humans have been laughing at this for thousands of years. Some things remain funny.
It is, and actually, there's a couple different of the stinkhorn variety. So I have a very edible, nice mushroom I'm going to enjoy all winter.
And are they strong? Strongly flavored, the stinkhorns?
They stink. This is, okay, it says non-poisonous.
Okay.
Thank
goodness.
It has a foul odor. It makes it terribly unlikely for eating, even though it is non-poisonous. It smells like dead carrion, so you probably don't want to eat it.
Why do you want to eat it then?
You don't. This is mushrooms in general.
You just found it.
I found it. And
so
I wanted to
pick it and dry it.
No. I wondered what the heck this thing was, and I thought you would enjoy a picture of this thing, the stinkhorn mushroom. But I do
stinkhorn
stink. But I do also eat mushrooms, and with my puffball mushrooms, I fried up a bunch of them until they were nice and buttery and crunchy. Well, not crunchy, but fried and then
I can remember as a child, my mother would occasionally we would find one and she would joyously fry it up, and it was like so astounding to me that you could find something like that and then eat it. That went right along with the frog legs popping in the pan. Those childhood, whoa.
Yeah, you remember that. You remember
Yeah, big impression.
And after I kind of mushed all this stuff up, I cooked it with garlic and onions and leeks and added, it had a lot of butter in there too, did I mention?
Mm.
And I put in a tomatillo because I had one, just a small one, just to add more sauce.
And it would also kind of cut the, add a little
brightness to it.
Spark, yeah.
I have found that this sort of stir-fry-ish thing goes really well with farro, a grain, a pearled grain, a slightly modified milled grain. It is it's an older variety
Something in the wheat family, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in the wheat family, and F-A-R-R-O, it cooks up like oatmeal or whatever, and that mixed together.
Is your farro not a whole grain?
It's a whole grain.
Okay, so
I'm just saying you
like
boil
a whole
it.
Oat.
Yeah, it's a whole oat. You just boil it.
It's not flattened.
Yeah, it's kind of in the same group of wheat species like spelt or emmer or einkorn. It's
notably eaten a lot in Italy, and there was when it was kind of first becoming popular in culinary circles, so we're talking maybe 15 years ago in the U.S., there was a big dispute. Was farro the same as spelt?
No, well, according to my little notes, it isn't.
But I'll tell you, given a taste test between the two, it'd be a hard draw. They're pretty similar.
Right. Anyway, that's my show and tell about my puffball and stinkhorn mushrooms. Oh, another nice thing to add in that sauce, adding with the mushrooms if you're cooking and making kind of a savory. A couple little shots of the red boat fish sauce is good in there, too.
Oh, basically anchovies. Yes.
Let that be your salt.
The umami. There you go.
There it is. Oh, so let's move from mushrooms to talk about something else, mooncakes. Mooncakes came up in a discussion around our kitchen table here with our engineer, Cynthia. And
because it was just a certain Chinese holiday, right, where mooncakes are the thing.
The Chinese lunar calendar celebrates its fall festival this time of year. And Cynthia, what took this whole idea of mooncakes? Why do we get started on that?
Well, I went to the Iowa State Fair, and they have up on the top of the hill a wonderful area where you can buy antiques. And I saw some mooncake molds.
Oh, just exactly what you would think you would find at the Iowa State Fair.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, it's right next to, what is it? I ended up picking antique buttonhole, you know, buttonhole hooks.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay, that makes a little more sense.
Anyway, I picked those up, and then I saw the mooncake molds, and it's not part of my culture, my background, but it's a food thing, and I always like food gadgets, and they're actually very beautiful.
Are they wooden?
They're wooden. They have a wonderful patina, and they're just you can make. I think they're also made for weddings as a gift.
Is it a big block or it's like for multiple mooncakes or individual?
These are individual mooncakes.
Oh, so they're like how big ish?
Size of a shoe, less than like kid shoe size. I would say just a small because they
cookie,
have a
cookie size.
They're cookie size, big, but they have a handle.
Oh.
So, and some of the mooncakes are bigger, and I think they're, you know, like you give fruitcakes and you give treats during different holidays. These are the equivalent, and they go back 1,000 B.C. in China. So there's a long story and
long
history.
Any ancient Chinese thing is bound to be way longer than
anything
we can even conceive of. It's the longest continuous civilization on the planet.
Think of this. This is a little footnote about history of mooncakes, these little cookies here. Chinese legend says that mooncakes helped overthrow the Mongolian Empire in the 14th century. Revolutionaries spread rumors about a deadly disease that could only be cured with mooncakes. And then when people cut into their mooncakes, they found a message with the date of the revolt, the 15th day of the 8th month of the year. That's a fall festival. So it has something to do with overthrowing the Mongolians, believe it or not, the 14th century.
So it brings good luck, then,
having
a mooncake.
So.
Well, if you're Chinese, not if you're Mongolian.
Well, I mean, I think it's a a festival for, you know, freedom, maybe.
Yeah, at that
point, because they were invading army.
Sure.
But
well, they're still busy doing this in China, I believe.
You know, it's just anybody, any tribe having things like that. Anyway, I believe that the fall festival was last Friday because it was on a full moon.
Mm-hmm. Ah, very good.
So,
and the mooncakes come in different flavors. It's mainly just the idea of giving a treat, but people have different ideas of
treats. So with the mold, what is it, a pressed dough? Do you bake in the mold, or it dries out in the mold, or
the mold just shapes the mooncakes? And
So you press them,
you
with
press
the stuff in them,
yeah,
and
press,
then you bake them.
You press a little bit of dough inside it, like you would a pie shell,
and then
I think you put like whatever filling it is. And for a mooncake, it's specifically a salted egg yolk, which is like amazing. I could not think about how to do that, and I saw a picture, and they separate the egg, and then they put salt. And it kind of dries and hardens.
Oh, that's right.
The egg.
It's something. It takes a while.
It takes
to
a
do.
While.
Huh.
So you salt it.
So it dehydrates the egg yolk.
It dehydrates the egg yolk, and then you put filling. And then there are different fillings, like lotus seed pod, sweet bean paste, and the what is
so
it?
So some are sweet.
Yeah, some are sweet, and then there's like five kernels, which is a bunch of nuts, and there's jumbie or something?
Jujubes.
Yeah, that's a date palm.
Yeah, it's a fruit that's similar to a date.
Yeah.
Not so quite as sweet and sticky.
But this isn't like, you know, cereal sweet. This is just, you know, regular sweet. This is not super, you know, corn syrup sweet. So it's, but it, they're super high calorie food. And at the time, this is when people needed that extra something. So this is
Because of the bean paste and the eggs.
Yeah,
and so very nutritious.
Very nutritious.
Yeah. Now, here's another little bit regarding that. In leaner times, mooncakes were high calories, sweet treats that were highly anticipated. Now that foods and treats aren't hard to find, the 800 calorie cakes are considered unhealthy. So your reference to the fact that they're kind of like fruitcakes, you know, you give them as a tradition. Maybe people don't eat them, and in recent years, mooncake supply has outpaced the demand because everybody wants to give them away, even if they don't want to. They don't want to eat them. It's the
that
thing
hence
to
the
do.
Fruitcake reference.
The things to do, and also during the fall festival, the idea of lanterns and fireworks and doing something to light up the night is important. Although, along with this, it says today they use glow sticks. So, yeah, things evolve.
Yeah.
So there's a glow sticks shortage, too, I guess, this time of year. Got to kind of keep up on this sort of thing. Oh, my God.
Well, the light is waning, as we know.
Here it comes, yeah. We're making fallish noises. Oh, it's going to be fall. Oh, my goodness. Speaking of food, and we celebrate with food. I mean, after all, I think it's sometime they have.
Well, what else is there going to celebrate
There's Oktoberfest coming up, and people have all kinds of festivals, and there's a bacon festival. But here's an interesting way to play with your food. I got this. This is a little news item from the Wall Street Journal. In Ireland, I guess they've got nothing better to do this time of year or something. In Ballydehobe, Ireland. They have a turnip race, and it's a big deal. They've kind of got tourists to come to this and everything. Now, picture this. The mayor stands at the foot of the hill. It's not a long race, but they have different heats, okay? So people each bring a turnip, and they're going to come running uphill, and you have to throw your turnip in front of you and keep picking it up and throwing in as it rolls back down the hill. So run. Pick up the turnip, run, throw it, and evidently all chaos evolves. So that's your turnip race.
So it's, yeah, because the turnip is kind of like a ball, but it's wobbly because
it's
not completely round.
Oh, it's wobbly. So it's
fun.
It's
good, cheap fun. All right.
Yeah, all of this crazy people, and, you know, they can do it, and they have the young folks do it, and the old folks do it, and whoever gets to the top of the hill to the finish line first with turnip in hand, and you have to be always pushing your turnip ahead.
I'm guessing that you can't kick your turnip.
You cannot kick your turnip. No, no. So that is something to do with turnips this time of year if you have. Now, that happens in Ireland. And along the grand prize is a pewter trophy filled with Irish whiskey. So people are really pushing their
turnips
up the hill.
Something worth competing for. And, of course, turnips come in a lot of different sizes.
Yeah. I don't know if there's an official size or whatever. Everybody brings their own. They bring their own turnip. I'm sure it's much talked about, and I'm sure there's strategy. Yeah. Well, and also in Buñuelos, Spain, there is a tomato festival where they have a big free-for-all.
Right, now you're not kicking the tomatoes.
No, you're throwing tomatoes at each other. That's fun. And in Brockworth, England, you have a cheese rolling festival where contestants chase an 8-pound wheel of double Gloucester cheese down a steep hill. Quote, you never catch the cheese. It's going about 80 miles an hour, but the winner is just the first one down the hill. So people have fun.
That's worth chasing.
Yeah, sure. I don't know what kind of shape it's in when it gets to the bottom, but still.
Well, it's a pretty hard cheese.
People having fun with their vegetables. Good for them.
Play with your food.
Good for them. We have a news department here.
Oh, yes.
And we have good news. We have bad news. We have a little bit of bummer news here from the Dental and Kitchen News Department. Tick 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 tick. This is the ticker tape that we have here in our kitchen, and Donna's got some news to share with us.
Yeah, this comes from what is the source of this? Something I read on the internet anyway in a peer-reviewed study, blah blah blah. The headline is it's about neonicotinoid. I can never say that.
We have been practicing neonicotinoid
pesticides. Mm-hmm. The headline is neonicotinoid pesticides have made U.S. agriculture more toxic. They are 1,000 times more toxic for bees than DDT and can last in the environment for months or years. Scientists are warning about a second silent spring after a new study found that U.S. agriculture is, are you ready for this? Here's a number, 48 more times more toxic to insects than it was 20 years ago.
Hey, folks, listen up here.
Huh. A peer-reviewed study found that 92% of the toxic load of insecticides in the environment can be attributed to neonicotinoids.
What are these things supposed to do?
They're supposed to, it's an insecticide, that the whatever's the little buggers don't eat your food crops. But the thing is, this particular kind of insecticide is not something that's sprayed on; it is a seed coating.
Oh.
So it's they first hit the agricultural market in the 1990s and are mostly applied on seed coatings. They're used on 140 different crops, but most prevalently on corn and soybeans. It also says farmers have a great deal of trouble finding uncoated seeds because the pesticide companies also own the seed market. So this is not the first study to raise concerns. You know, this has all to do with our declining bees. And then there's another study published in April in Biological Conservation warned that 40% of the world's insect species are facing extinctions in the next few decades. And they remind us all that insects are the basis of the food web that sustains all life on Earth. Without insects, we would have ecosystem collapse. So it was just saying that, part of the problem is pesticide companies have a great deal of power in Washington. I mean, it just, why are we doing this? I read this study, and then that same day I read something else that was another study that showed that the yield gain from using this is actually negligible.
Oh, for goodness sake.
So why are we poisoning the environment heartily and most of the insects with something that is not improving the farmer's bottom line, is in fact probably costing him a lot? And, of course, our government is unable to regulate these things for the public benefit because, da-da, money. Lots of lobbying. You know, it's just another bummer, bummer, bummer. You know, other than voting, what are we going to do?
Not buy those seeds, I guess. I don't. So.
Well, but it's unless you're seeking out organic seeds, you're going to. It's very difficult for, you know, the average corn and bean farmer to find any other seed source, even if he doesn't want to do that. It's like, why do we have to drive gas-guzzling cars? Well, because if you want to buy an electric car, you can't really drive it except just around town.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. You know, we'll
get there. Well, to kind of wrap up this bummer news, I'll try to say it one more time. Neonicotinoids.
Bravo.
Oh.
Very good.
Oh,
very
yuck.
Good.
Oh, yuck. Yuck. Be on the lookout for, and they are out there.
Yeah, and it is a big public discussion going on. It's just one of those things that nobody really needs, nobody really wants. It actually does a lot of harm to the environment, costs farmers a lot of money, and, you know, why the heck are we doing this stuff?
You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, and you are listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, which comes to you around our kitchen table. We're going to be talking about some of the harvest bounty this time of year. It can be kind of overwhelming. My goodness.
But in such a good way.
It's so good. What's cooking in your kitchen with all this stuff coming from the garden?
Well, it's eggplant season.
Eggplant.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're shopping at the farmer's market, you discover that not all eggplants are those kind of deep purpley black things shaped as big as a football. We have different long skinny ones, light purple, white, rosy variegated ones, all kinds of beautiful, beautiful eggplant. Of course, they all taste kind of the same, more or less, except for there are some teeny weeny little more Indian and Asian eggplants that can be quite bitter. But the rest of them all are kind of, you can substitute one for the other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one thing I am making quite a bit this year is something called caponata, or caponata della nonna, which means grandmother's eggplant. And it is an antipasta. The base of it is, you know, if you read a recipe, it's supposed to be Sicilian in origin, right? But if you read a recipe, they'll all say, cut the eggplant, then salt it, then drain it, then fry it, wada, wada, wada. Well, of course, I don't do that. For something like this dish, it's just really not necessary. My favorite way of dealing with eggplant is roasting in the oven. Either actually a very simple thing that I love to do is, well, first a little warning. Never just stick a whole eggplant in the oven because it will explode, right?
Yeah.
And then you will have an eggplant-coated oven.
We provide safe cooking here.
Yes, wow. Right. I mean, it's not like it's going to do any serious bodily harm, but it is really a mess. So if you want to roast a whole eggplant, you must poke a few holes in it. So that the steam can get out through the skin. A really super easy thing that I like to do is just slice them in half, cut the funny stem thing off and slice them in half and just either spray or lightly grease them with olive oil. And then you can season them any way you want, salt and pepper or Aleppo pepper or dried oregano, chopped basil, anything you want, and then just roast them and serve them like that. They're delicious, when they get all squishy. Or then you can scrape them out of the skin, and you can make, what's that Middle Eastern eggplant dip?
Baba ganoush.
Baba ganoush, there you go.
Which is spelled many different ways, but remember how it sounds, baba ganoush.
Yeah, it's basically a mashed eggplant, and you can mash it with just olive oil and salt and pepper, or you can put a little yogurt in, or some people put a little mayonnaise in, and that's a really, really simple thing. But for the caponata, what I do, and this is also a way you can prepare the eggplant and then freeze it, I cut it into about 1-inch cubes with the skin on. I don't peel my eggplant. And then lightly toss it in olive oil. Now, olive oil, just like mushrooms, can absorb oil and absorb oil and absorb oil. So for those of us that want to be a little conserving on the high caloric, oily, fatty content, even though olive oil is a good fat, if you just lightly toss it and then I put it on my Silpat on my baking sheet, you can season it before you bake it. A good idea, even if you're doing just salt and pepper, or that's also a nice time to crunch in a little dried herb, not too much oregano if you're doing oregano, but certainly basil, maybe marjoram. Sometimes I even put a little dried coriander ground in it. So anyway, you're tossing the eggplant pieces with olive oil. Then you put them on a baking sheet. It doesn't have to be like just one deep, but you don't want to, you don't want to put a mountain of them on. But you put maybe two inches deep or something like that and spread them out and put them on baking sheets. And then you just cook them till you can pierce them easily with a fork or a knife or something.
Medium oven?
Yeah, 350.
That's always good.
It's not fussy. Yeah. And then at that point, you're ready to put them for caponata, or you can actually cool them off and throw them in freezer bags.
Ah, good.
Yep. So caponata is this wonderful thing. It has a little tomato, but it's not predominantly a tomato. It's an antipasto, so I really like to make it one day, let it sit overnight in the fridge, serve it the next day and for a week thereafter, basically. Just on a nice toasted piece of bread, slice a baguette, rub a little garlic on it, toast it even on the flame of the stove or something like that, but just crusty bread. So it is, it's basically you cook your eggplants. Now, traditionally, I mean, you can throw it all in a pan and just stew the whole thing, but it's a little more interesting if you cook the individual ingredients discreetly and then mix them together. So it's the eggplants and then celery. So I cut the celery fairly chunky, and you sauté it. You want it still crisp. So with the mush of the eggplant, you got the crunch of the celery. Those are the two dominant vegetables. And then, of course, you sauté some onions. And then after you've sautéed the onions, and I cook the onions also in fairly large chunks, and I do not cook them dead. I still want them to have a little integrity to them also. And then with the onions, I throw in – or you can, and you can season the eggplant too. I put a lot of coriander in mine and basil and maybe a pinch of oregano. Because what you're doing is you're seasoning it up, and then it takes just a little bit of tomato paste, enough to make it slightly red. You can put that in the caramelized, not caramelized, the lightly sautéed onions, right, with the herbs and spices.
Could you use just a tomato? It's kind of runny, but
yeah. Well, yeah. If you wanted to use a few tomatoes, you just should cook them down.
Okay. Yeah. Not too mushy. Okay.
Yeah. Tomatoes. But then after you get, so you've got your, oh, and this is controversial, but I like it. Some recipes call for cocoa powder.
Ha! Huh.
I know. But it's actually really good. And you do, so this is supposed to be a sweet, sour, vinegary thing. So once you get the vegetables all ready, then you stir them together. Lightly, you don't want to mush them up too much. Then you add capers, drained. You take green olives, pitted, and chop them up. And fresh parsley, then vinegar and sugar.
Ha!
And then you kind of just let that sit overnight, and it's really good.
Oh, yes, because it should marinate or
yeah,
sit for a while.
The flavors need to marinate. Now, on the vinegar... although it's, you know, you don't want to use, like, distilled vinegar. The first choice would be a red wine vinegar, not balsamic.
Ah.
But a red wine vinegar. Mm-hmm. I have used white wine vinegars as well. Want that kind of sweet, sour, tangy thing.
Very good. Yeah, it is the kind of thing, sounds like you can visit it every, you know, if you're hungry, take a little bit and put it on some bread.
It's yummy.
Wonderful at a party. Oh, how nice.
Caponata.
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 Oh, also, you mentioned back when you were chopping this stuff up to take off that funny stem end, which is kind of obvious. You take that. But I don't know where I learned this, but a way to tell if a eggplant is ripe and ready to pick as it's hanging there on the vine, or maybe even you find it at a farmer's market, the little leaves that are little pointy leaves wrapping down around the eggplant should start to curl up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of, I'm ready. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what. So that's a good way to deal with eggplant.
Oh, yeah. Eat lots of eggplant. Don't be intimidated by it. It's really a simple, delicious, fun thing to cook, especially this time of year.
Very good. And maybe I can even convince Donna to put that on the Donna Lana Kitchen website. Did I mention the Donna Lana Kitchen website? We've got some other recipes there if you would like to look up and get some inspiration for what to do with some of your fall harvest vegetables. There, we do it a lot. We make oven candied tomatoes.
Oh, and is that good? Yep. I would encourage everybody, especially we're at the ending parts of tomato season where you're tired of BLTs and tomato salads.
And the tomatoes just keep coming. And they're not really so, since some of them went through the hail, they're not so pretty. But you can cut them up, put them on a cookie sheet.
Cut them in, you know, what we call it, longitudinal slices, basically. I don't know. What do you cut yours? A quarter inch?
I cut mine in quarters. Like,
oh, you cut yours in quarters.
So that you end up with a peel side down and the mushy side up all over. Because that makes little cups, little things to catch the juice.
See, there you go. We all have these different techniques.
And the idea is to start the oven really hot and...
Hot is...
I start at 425.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah. Because you want to kind of drive away all that excess moisture. And I use a lot of olive oil. You need olive oil, and it just kind of cooks down to the best glop you have ever cooked
with. And I olive oil my pan really well, and I cut it in slices and kind of spread them out all over the pan. But the same thing, you start with a higher temperature, and then you keep dropping I mean, you think this is a lot of work because it does take a while, mm-hmm. like a few hours mm-hmm. at least,
oh, yeah.
to drop them down that low. But you just, it's nothing, you know. You just got to remember to go turn the oven down
occasionally. It's a multitasking thing.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's why the goddess invented egg timers.
How do you season yours? There's lots of options.
Salt and pepper, because then when I put that in a little freezer bag and freeze it, when I take it out and use it for something else, then I add extra stuff.
Look at how industrious she is. I eat all mine. It's so good. I just, it disappears. And I just crush a little oregano and maybe some dried basil on it and salt and pepper.
Yes. So do not be intimidated by all that stuff coming out of your garden. You can go to khoifm.org and find the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage there. We have past shows if you just can't get enough of us. But also, there is a recipe page there. There is a recipe.
And that one, do we list that one?
It's
tomato candy?
Of oven candied tomatoes.
There you go.
It's under that. And also there is a bread and butter pickle recipe there that if you don't know what to do with your cukes or zucchini, I love making bread and butter zucchinis. That's it. The bread and butter pickle recipe, you can just make it as a refrigerator pickle or you can can it. So it's on that recipe
Alana,
page.
Just walk us through the refrigerator pickle idea quickly.
Oh, my goodness. Can I remember? Okay. A big bowl, a big something or other, because you want to cut up all of your things you want to pickle. It could be okra, too. Onions, peppers, sliced zucchini, and salt it. Salt it with a non-iodized salt, quite a bit of it, and put some ice cubes on it. Let that set on the kitchen counter for about 2 hours. That salt starts drawing out some of the moisture.
Okay? Is that in a strainer or it's just
in the
bowl?
No, not in a strainer. Okay. Actually, I've got some big pans, big high-sided pans mm-hmm. I use for it. I make a lot. And then in a strainer, rinse it lightly. You don't have to get all the salt off, but rinse it lightly. And you can pack it in clean jars. And on the stove, you are boiling.
Vinegar.
Look up the recipe for the quantities. Vinegar.
What kind of vinegar are you using?
Apple cider vinegar. And sugar. And look up the recipe for sure. But the
mustard. Mustard seeds, celery seeds, probably turmeric,
and black pepper. I put the peppercorns in, and I put in a couple of hot peppers because I like that. And you can pack that into jars, pour this stuff over, and then you can just cover it and put it in the refrigerator, or I take it the next step and can it, because you can do that too. So, but check out that recipe. It is on the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage at khoifm.org. Look for recipes.
And these are all things if you know, it's like, I get this way. I don't want to go into a whole canning thing, right? Because mm-hmm. that is can be a rather large deal. But if I think, I just want to make one jar of pickles or the tomato thing, maybe I'd make one sheet pan of tomato candy just for the sport of it. You know, it's not too overwhelming that way. It's not like I'm trying to preserve the foods. I'm just wanting to taste them.
Ah, very good. What a nice time of year. All the harvest bounty. This is KHOI, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen.
Thank you.
come back. That was a little tune called The Summer Walk. We've got summer left. Yes, we do. We'll be strolling around your kitchen. Another bit of a news item here. You find the darndest things on the internet, and I thought, well, I'll share this with you. Now, we do live on a finite planet. I think we're some of us are figuring that
some
out.
Some of us are finite anyway.
Yeah, we're finite. Yeah, we've figured out that we got to take care of what we've got. And water. Water is going to become a pretty precious commodity if we keep treating it like dirt. No, then that's not quite right. But we overuse a lot of water. We waste a lot of water. And I am.
Well, it's hard to imagine around here.
I know,
we have
right
so
now.
So much water.
But there are places that have drought and fires and
well, that's why we like to live here.
Oh, yes, yes. But we eat from all over. Even those of us who try to eat local, we like stuff from far away.
Coffee, for example.
Coffee, yeah.
Chocolate.
And everything about what it takes, not just the, well, let's not deal with the food miles here so much, but water. Some plants take a lot of water, some plants and other things that we eat. So I've got an article here by Jody Helmer. I got it from the HuffingtonPost.com. 9 everyday foods that are making the drought even worse. I don't know where her drought was, but 9 everyday foods that take a lot of water to bring to our table. Okay? So, almonds. I guess probably up on the top of everybody's list is almonds. Who would have thought? The little great food, almonds. The iconic California crop is a major weather hog. It takes, get
water
this,
hog.
3.2 gallons of water to make a single almond. That a lot of that has to do with it's a tree crop, which means those trees have to go for years and years and years before an almond happens. It goes through a season. But still, I had heard that before.
Well, but it is quite controversial in California. In the years that they have a drought, everybody starts fussing because the almond growers are hogging all the water.
Right. They have to irrigate them. Yeah. Water is pumped and we get our almonds. And here's another one on the list. Of course, we kind of know this. Beef, the amount of water cows drink, between 9 to 20 gallons per day, is a drop in the bucket compared with the 24 trillion gallons of water to irrigate, and here again, irrigate cropland and pasture land. If we have to irrigate this stuff and we feed a lot of food.
Why are we growing the cows in those places?
I know, but there it goes. All that goes to bring us beef, commercial beef. Milk. You got to have water first, of course. It's kind of a liquid thing.
Yeah, okay, Lonnie, you're from Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and when you were a child, Wisconsin was the dairy state, right?
Twas.
Lots of green grass up there, okay? Now, California is the dairy state. Well, they don't grow grass a lot in California.
Again.
I have to tell you, I've been there a little bit.
All this bringing in the water heavy stuff. So we can
are
have
just
our milk.
So smart, us human beings. Oh boy.
So considering all that stuff, 52 gallons of water to produce a 8-ounce glass of milk. Beer. Now that's not quite so bad. It takes less than 3 gallons of water to brew a gallon of, to make a gallon of beer. So we're good for that. So,
well, also, when you're drinking the beer, somewhere in your brain, it's really obvious that there's some water involved.
Okay.
You know,
coffee. It takes 35 gallons of water to grow enough coffee for a single cup of coffee.
Chocolate.
An 8-ounce bar takes more than 1,500 gallons of water, huh?
Well, but the thing is, chocolate, for example, and coffee, if they're grown, for example, in the Costa Rican rainforest, they have a lot of water there.
Right. That's an okay use for that. Another big user, rice, of course, but they're working on different kinds of rice that can be more dry.
Yeah, they are having some dry land rice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh?
And proteins like chicken is not as bad as beef, but it takes 500 gallons of water to produce a pound of chicken. Huh? And the chickens have to grow for a couple months before you can eat the chicken. And sugar, last but not least, a teaspoon of sugar takes more than a gallon of water to produce. Keep that in mind, folks. Don't stop eating because of this, but be aware. This has been going on a long time, and we are upping the ante by making things irrigated, and we're trying to push. So that kind of puts a lot of water at risk here. So middle of September, we start thinking about what the moon and the sun and the planets are doing here, just to kind of get our brains away from chickens and sugar for a minute here. The fall equinox is coming up.
Yes, the days will be as long as the nights now, but not for long.
Ah, it's good. So some of the things you can remember about September this time of year coming up real soon. On the 21st of December is St. Matthew's Day. Huh?
21st of what?
September.
September.
Uh-huh. Huh?
Okay.
And that has to do with creation and divine life. And the Norwegian king, Olaf, he died for his principles. And I guess it was not pretty. But anyway, he was strong to the end, Norwegian king Olaf. He celebrated on this day. But it also celebrates the fruit of the vine and grapes. So if Matthew's Day is bright and clear, it brings good wine in the next year. Let's hope for a good, sunny St. Matthew's Day. And on the equinox here, time when darkness overtakes the light, and we're kind of evening things up here. Balance is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it addresses, or the goddesses of this time of year are Carpo and Carmen. Carpo is the deity of autumn, and Carmen is the deity of poetry. So keep those in mind. Yeah, that's good. All right.
So we do have the equinox. Is it on the 21st this year? I don't know.
No, I think it... what is it?
It averages on the 21st anyway, so that would make the first...
It's close.
The end of summer, basically.
This calendar says the 23rd, but I'm sure you can.
Well, it changes every year.
It changes every year. Right.
A day or two, not much.
Right.
But
see, we have some upcomings, I guess, besides the Pagan Book of Days. The Octagon Arts Festival is coming up, and it's a time of year when people gather here in central Iowa, up and down Main Street. The Octagon Arts Center sponsors this event where artists bring all their stuff and set
all
up their
handmade stuff. Yeah.
So that's this Sunday, and it's fun just to walk up and down and see what's going on. There's always music. There's dancing going on. So Octagon Arts Festival this Sunday, September
23rd. Yeah, and you can start buying your Christmas presents early.
Oh.
There's always some unique things that, you know, it's not like you can just go on Amazon and buy this stuff. No, this
be Johnny on the spot.
This is really...
And there'll be a World Food Fest in Des Moines coming up, too. So look for that. Very good. All right. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you every Tuesday at noon. We repeat it at 7 p.m. Or you can listen to us anytime. Go to khoifm.org. You can stream us. You can download. You can put us on your device. Support community radio station. We had music today by a band called Changeling. And you heard the tune Jenny Pippin. You heard The Summer Walk. And we're going to end with a nice little ditty called Love at the Ending. Very good. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Thanks to Cynthia for mooncake information and for fine engineering. Eat good food and enjoy life.